National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
For 20 years now, the National Catholic Register has put a spotlight on faithful Catholic colleges and universities. Every year, we survey these colleges and provide would-be parents and students the info they need to know about Catholic identity on campus. This week on Register Radio, we delve into the Catholic Identity College Guide. Then we turn to another valuable resource produced by the National Catholic Register, the 2024 Catholic Voters Guide. How do the two presidential nominees line up on issues of importance to the Catholic faithful this year? We explore the candidates, the issues, and church teaching. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Executive Director of the National Catholic Register and Catholic News Agency. I'm your host here on Register Radio, and today I'm joined by a few National Catholic Register editors, the Editor-in-Chief, Shannon Mullen, Tom Wehner, the longtime Managing Editor who keeps our print edition going issue after issue, and Amy Smith, who is another longtime editor who copy edits everything but focuses much of her attention on our wonderful Register features. So we're celebrating this 20th anniversary. The Catholic Identity College Guide is now 20 years old. And for this guide, what we typically do is survey Catholic colleges on how well they aim to pass on the faith through the education, but also on the college campus, the culture of the campus. And we know that this is of value to many, many people because they tell us. So Shannon, I want to bring you into this conversation. You've been with the Register only about a year or so as the editor-in-chief, but you are no stranger to our coverage of Catholic identity, of our nation's colleges and universities, right?
That's right. I have the Register really to thank. I've had one daughter graduate from Belmont Abbey. I have two daughters there now. And it was really through the Register that Belmont Abbey got put on my radar. The Register's coverage, it's going back a few years now, about the Health and Human Services contraception mandate. And Belmont Abbey was one of the first to stand up to that. And was filed a lawsuit, was assisted by the Beckett Fund, and that really made an impression on my wife Eileen and I. We saw that, and it was, hey, we've got a, I think we were aware of Belmont Abbey loosely, but it moved it very high on our list, thanks to the Register.
Yeah, and that's really one of the things we want to do is elevate these schools that are really adhering to their Catholic identity in every aspect. And so, Shannon, since you've led the team in putting this year's guide together, I'd really like to hand over this conversation for you to lead with the other two editors.
That's my pleasure, Jeanette. Yes, Tom, let's begin with the cover. It's our cover this year is very distinctive, and it highlights the fact that, as Jeanette mentioned, this is our 20th anniversary issue. So can you help us understand, how did this concept get started, Tom?
Well, Shannon, it's a pleasure to be with you. And as I look on the Catholic Identity College Guide cover, it brings back a lot of memories over the years of all the schools that have been part of us on this, part of gone with us on this journey, and the new ones that have been coming up with us in recent years. The genesis of the College Guide really has Pope John Paul II to thank, and his 1990 document, Ex Corde Ecclesiae, which was his response to a 1967 Land O'Lakes statement, which lots of universities distanced themselves from the Catholic Church, the institutional church. And Pope John Paul wanted to see Catholic colleges and universities become closer with the local bishops. And so this was his document, Ex Corde Ecclesiae, sought to answer that and to get theology departments of these colleges and get the Catholic identity that had gone astray by some of these schools, try to get restored in a lot of these schools. And so we painstakingly sent out questionnaires to many, many universities. There are 233 Catholic universities and colleges, according to the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. And so the first year, 2004, we had 16 respondents. And so we've had our ups and downs, mostly ups, as the college guide has grown. And in this 20th year, we can boast of 53 colleges and universities who answered, who want to promote their Catholic identity and who want to attract young Catholic men and women.
Yeah, that's so encouraging to hear that. And so on our cover, you see all those covers over the years of the Register's Guide. And it's so great that this year we have a record number of respondents. So let's talk about some of the new additions this year. There's some new colleges joining the ranks.
Mm-hmm. Well, one I can say that we've had a story on it on ncregister.com has been Rosary College, which is a two-year liberal arts college with an emphasis on traditional values and faith. So they have just begun their inaugural semester with an enrollment of 20 students. And familiar face to Register readers and Register readers both in print and online is Joseph Pierce, who he's a Tolkien scholar, and he teaches a humanities intro class at Rosary College, which is based in South Carolina. We do have a couple other schools that have started in the last couple of years that are emphasizing the trade school, St. Joseph the Worker in Steubenville, Ohio, and San Damiano College for Trades in Springfield, Illinois, and Santiago Trade School in Orange County, California, just to name three, emphasizing a classical curriculum with learning the trades, which is important in our society today.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Just to describe maybe for our listeners a little bit what the guide consists of, and we'll get to Amy on that, is there's a breakdown according to a number of different criteria that we use, and we'll get into that. And so there's basically little bios on each college describing the number of majors and other features about the college, financial aid, that sort of thing. And so, Amy, let's turn to you. What are some of the more, there's a lot of college guides out there. I went through a lot myself with my children. What's some of the more unique aspects of the Register's Guide?
Sure. It's great to be with you and talking about our mainstay guide that really does help Catholic families and students pick the right school for them. I think one of the things that makes our guide unique, as you said, we list statistics like number of students, so students get an idea if they want to be on a larger campus or a smaller campus, as well as things like tuition. But I think what sets our guide apart is focusing on the criteria such as majors and disciplines. So we break out what schools focus on grade book or STEM, which is obviously math, engineering, science related. So that's really interesting. So a lot of our mainstay schools, such as Thomas Aquinas College comes to mind, they have a great book criteria, but that also translates really well into tech careers, as one of our reporters found. So we give that practical information so a student can figure out where to go if they're interested in engineering. Actually, Ave Maria University, that has been with us since the beginning, along with schools like TAC and Belmont Abbey. Ave Maria now has an engineering major, but one of our mainstay schools is the University of Mary. They have a lot of STEM focus as well, including with the St. Gianna School of Health Sciences. So that's really important. But we also give practical information, such as what to ask on a college tour. You can discern with some of these important questions, as well as career guidance, and even practical tips for living well in your dorm. So we got all of that in the guide with good writing and reporting from our summer interns and correspondents.
Fantastic. Tom, Catholic identity, how do we measure that? And, you know, what are the kinds of questions we ask of these schools?
Well, we ask if their theology department takes an oath of fidelity to the Catholic Church that they will not teach anything that's contrary to the teachings of the faith, and that they uphold the faith and morals that the Catholic Church teaches on campus, as to not dispensing with contraceptives or providing abortion services in that respect.
Yeah, I mean, you know, sadly, a lot of our Catholic colleges do that. So, you know, it's important that we ask these questions. And really, more fundamentally, I mean, this really responds to the problem that parents were paying a lot of money for a Catholic education and thinking they were going to get a Catholic, you know, a solid Catholic education. And yet their children were coming back really losing the faith while they were at school because of a lot of the trends on many Catholic campuses. So these criteria are really basic, but they're also really difference makers as far as what sets these schools apart from other Catholic institutions.
That's exactly right. And I'll jump in here because we're just, at the tail end of the show and we're going to go to the next segment. But one of the stories you guys covered, it wasn't in the College Guide, but it was an important one, was about Notre Dame University and the president making an oath of faith, right? And these are, canon law requires that the president and theology teachers make an oath of fidelity, and then also the mandatum, which is I agree to teach the Catholic faith. And that's not always required to be public, and this year's news was that it's not public for the Notre Dame new president. But this is something we covered as a news story. But you guys, time and time again, are covering this through this college guide. And just being able to see that information is super important, and I know it guides so many people, as we were saying before. We hear from people, and we're so grateful for the feedback that our listeners provide us. So I applaud you guys for 20 years. Congratulations. Happy anniversary. And I look forward to all the rest of the coverage that you guys are leading our team on in terms of covering the colleges. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeanette.
We're going to take a short break right now. You've been listening to Register Radio on EWTN, and we will take a look at the Voter's Guide in the next segment. This is the National Catholic Register's Voter's Guide. You've been listening to Register Radio. Stay tuned for more.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Executive Director of the National Catholic Register and Catholic News Agency. I'm joined by Matthew Bunsen, my co-host here on Register Radio. He is EWTN News' Vice President and Editorial Director. And we were just talking about the Catholic Identity Guide. That's a college guide. And that was the September 22nd issue of the Register. And now we're looking ahead to the October 6th issue of the Register, and it has a special guide in it. It's the Voter's Guide. So we're considering how to vote on November 5th for the presidential election, and the Register, every presidential election year, takes a look at how the candidates square on key Catholic issues. And that's what our voter guide is. So it'll be October 6th print edition, but you can find it online now. I am welcoming back Shannon Mullen. Senior editor Jonathan Liddle is with us. And we also have the head of EWTN's theology department, Colin Donovan, joining us today. So welcome to all of you to take a look at a Catholic perspective on how to vote this year.
Great to be with you.
Great to be with you.
Certainly.
All right. Well, Colin, I think we're going to start with you because I think the first thing we should talk about is why vote? Why is voting a Catholic thing anyway?
Well, it is in the context of modern societies. You go back to the early church and Christians were sort of on the outs politically and we didn't get too involved in it. We prayed for the emperors, Tertullian notes, and we look at ourselves as citizens more of heaven than this earthly realm. But nonetheless, in democracies, we think of our own country where our Constitution says, we the people of the United States. we have an obligation to contribute to the good of the whole society. We are not individual human beings so much as members of families. Families are members of cities and counties and states and the national country. So it's part of our gratitude for our existence, as St. Thomas would say, part of patriotism, to take an active role in our societies, to contribute to the good of societies. And among those things we can do that is to choose our leaders who will either contribute to the good of the country or produce chaos and even evil in a country.
Absolutely.
So very good reason to vote.
Very good reason to vote. Exactly. It's our presence matters. And so our Catholic presence in the public square really does matter. Shannon, just like we talked about the college guide, this is a visual. I mean, this is something you can pull out of the paper and open it up and look at it and mull over it, sit in your armchair and really, really get into it. Give us a visual of what this guide looks like.
This year's guide, Jeanette, is 6 pages, and it's a challenge every year. I mean, the length varies, but it's a challenge every year to cram a lot of useful, solid information into those pages. And so what you're going to see, as you said, it's inserted into the regular register edition, and every time we do this, we identify the editors and others here at EWTN, identify some core issues that are particularly going to resonate with Catholics in that given year. So we've done that this year. We call them pillars. And there's a zillion issues in this presidential election, as you know. But this is a good focusing device to focus on some broader themes that we think Catholics are really impacted by and care about.
Right. And of course, what we do is we take those pillars, which I'm going to have you name in a few minutes. But, you know, we take those pillars and we look at what the church teaches on those pillars. And then we also look at what the party says about those particular issues, and then the candidates themselves. So you kind of see that side by side. It's super, super helpful. But let's talk about what some of those pillars are. Can you list them so that we get an idea of what we're talking about?
Sure. And I should interject also to make an important point. We're not telling you how to vote.
Right.
You know, we're helping, you know, as we say in the guide, obviously it's important to know where the candidates stand on key issues, but it's also important for us as Catholics to have well-formed consciences and to be aware of the guidance and the teaching that the church provides. The church doesn't tell you who to vote for either, you know, so it just gives you a lens to look at these issues, which this year the 7 pillars are: the economy, abortion and life issues, immigration, family life, care for creation, care for the elderly, and foreign policy.
Good. Very good. And I know we're going to bring Jonathan in right now, because I know he did some of the research for 2 of these. One, I think, was care for creation, right, Jonathan? And then family life. So give us a sense of what you pulled out in those 2 areas. I mean, vast areas. But what can we look to this guide to tell us about those areas?
Yeah, absolutely, Jeanette. So starting with family life, you know, we know the church teaches in the catechism that the family is the original cell of social life. So the union between a man and a woman, the family they establish, it's not an accident. It's part of God's plan for the common good and for human dignity. And so because of that, the church teaches that that society and our public policies can't merely be neutral when it comes to the family, but actually have to take the good of the family into account and how to help the family flourish, and really how to help parents live out their duties. So if we look at the candidates and we look at the parties, one thing both parties have in common is that when it comes to sort of the material aspects of raising a family, both propose measures to help family formation, to help make raising kids more affordable. So we see child tax credits, both parties proposing those. They're kind of trying to outcompete each other, right, in which ones are bigger. And they both connect lowering taxes for the middle class with family formation. But then if we look at something like Because we know that families aren't just about having their material conditions, but really ensuring that parents can transmit healthy values to their kids. The parties couldn't be more different when it comes to things like culture and really ideological threats to the family. So we think especially gender ideology, which Pope Francis has called a really ugly ideology. Trump and the Republicans, they aim to end left-wing gender insanity, right? That's in the party platform. And they want to do that by restoring parental rights in education, defunding schools that push gender ideology. And Democrats and Kamala Harris are the exact opposite on this. They plan to expand LGBTQ, so-called LGBTQ rights, which we know have already pushed parents out of things like the foster care system. And we know that they have counteracted states' attempts to restrict harmful gender right. interventions for minors. So very, very, you know, very stark differences kind of yes. when we take the entirety of family life as a whole and apply it to the candidates and the parties there.
Let me jump in. I want to turn. I mean, I just, you know, family life, and I don't want to miss out on Colin, too. I want to bring him back in the conversation in a second here. But, you know, we mentioned care for creation. We mentioned family life, and as important as care for creation is, and family life is, we've learned as Catholics over the years to about terms like non-negotiable, and the U.S. bishops use the term for abortion. Right, as the preeminent issue that we should be considering as we vote. Jonathan, those are sometimes buzzwords for people. They really irk them. Sometimes they really help guide them. What do we make out of the priorities? Here we are listing seven, and any individual voter might have 12 things that they're really concerned about. How do we make sense of what's our guide as we think about all these issues?
Yeah, well, I think the church, it has its social principles, right? It has principles about human dignity and the common good that apply to all these various different issues. And I think we need to take, in the process of forming our consciences, we need to take all of these principles into account, whether they're talking about family life or care for creation, whether they're talking about economics or protecting the sanctity of life. At the same time, though, we do know that certain issues in our society are graver threats to human dignity than others. And so, of course, the preeminent issue that the U.S. bishops have consistently reminded us of is abortion. Abortion is killing of human life, in its most vulnerable state and done on an industrial scale in the U.S. So we need to take into account, when we're forming our consciences, I don't think it's ever kind of okay to say, well, I'm not going to look at that issue that the church talks about, right? Like, I'm only going to focus on a set number of issues. But there's also a preeminence, right? And I think we take that into account when forming our consciences and then applying it to the candidates and deciding who we're going to vote for.
Yeah, so Colin, let's talk a little bit more about prudential judgments versus intrinsic evil, especially as we're looking mm-hmm. at policies, because I think this is something that Catholic voters really do need to take into account.
They really do, because all the ideas of the pillars is great because it'll help elucidate large areas of the public policy. But when the church is speaking of the common goods that are necessary for society, it's generally speaking of three areas, and that is human life and what flows from human life, the dignity we owe to human life at every stage of life, in every condition of life, natural marriage and the family that flows from that, and all the things which family needs to thrive and so on. But then the element of freedom of religion, the freedom of parents to raise their children. You're talking about the cell of society. If the cell of society is not healthy, you're not going to have a healthy society. So we're looking at non-negotiable items. These are items which are non-negotiable. Now, when you get into the more complex issues of the economy or immigration or family policy or elder policy or foreign policy, you're dealing necessarily with multiple issues, and you're dealing usually with complex circumstances. And so the church refers to those, and Pope Benedict initiated this idea, as far as I can tell, as these are negotiable. They're policy things. They have to be argued out. You have to compare the resources of a country to accomplish things. They're regarding the means to the good of dignity and providing health care and all the services that we would want to give people if we could afford it, if we can do it, if we can find a means. So these arguments about means and all these areas, those are negotiable issues. But the three basic things of life, the nature of marriage, the nature of religious freedom, and all the freedoms that flow from what we call the first freedom in the United States, those things are not negotiable. Those, a society needs those to be solid, solidly founded, and without them is on some degree on a path to destruction. So those have to be emphasized.
Very briefly then, looking at from that perspective, what is a Catholic voter to make of, for example, Pope Francis's observation about finding the lesser of two evils?
Right. He's referring to a principle which is pretty standard in moral theology, and I don't want to go into the details in the time we have. But it simply means that when you have two candidates, one of whom perhaps embraces more of the evils, in other words, is not serving the common good in these broad areas, and another one who may have some imperfections in that, it's just to say that I am going to vote for the lesser of the two. Now, we can't actually vote for evil. So what we're voting to do in the mind of the church is we're voting to stop a greater threat, a greater evil. Mm-hmm. That's what is in the will. That's what we embrace, not the evil that a particular candidate may otherwise do, even though we vote for them. It's to stop that greater evil.
Yeah, these are interesting times. We're so grateful for this guide. So October 6th is when the print edition comes out with this guide, but also you can find it online. You can go into greater depth in each one of these areas. So hopefully this can shed greater light. Remember, there's more news, analysis, and commentary at ncregister.com. And as always, thanks for joining us here on Register Radio on EWTN. Together with Matthew Bunsen and our producer, Michael McCall, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Until next week, may God bless you.